Yes.
Okay. But those who do not know me, I'm Zhora Shliapnikov. Yes. Well, actually, my name is not Zhora. My name is Georgi Vsevolodovich. It's a Greek-Russian name. But in English it can be translated as George, and Zhora is a nickname. Yes, but when I came to the Western Europe, everybody started to call me Zhora, and now it's my name. So everybody does, and no one objects. Actually, the story I'm going to tell you from a theoretical point of view is quite simple. I even sometimes use the term trivial. From the point of view of general physics, it's very interesting. And in fact, the small prehistory of this story is already something like 1.5 years old. And the question that has been raised is the following. Imagine that I have a one-dimensional Bose-Einstein condensate. So I have a trapping potential, yes, which is m omega squared z squared divided by 2. And then I superimpose a disorder potential everywhere here, yes? Then, usually, when I pronounce the term one-dimensional Bose-Einstein condensate, I have to make a remark here, that in 1D, yes, our good friend Thierry Giammarchi is sitting here, in 1D, as we know, there is no true Bose-Einstein condensates. Even at zero temperature, we have an algebraic decay of the one-body density matrix. Yes, we can pronounce the word quasi-condensate or whatever. But yes, yes. But the trapped Bose gas is a finite size system. Yes, and in the weakly interacting regime, and the weakly interacting regime is identified as mass multiplied coupling constant multiplied h squared density, this is the 1D density, is much smaller than 1. The phase coherence length, the characteristic length of phase fluctuations, yes, is very large, and therefore usually it exceeds the characteristic size of the system. Yes, therefore what happens is that on a length scale of the size of this Bose gas, the phase fluctuations do not manifest themselves. And then it's a purely finite size effect that you have a Bose-Einstein condensate. In an extremely large system, this would really be what it should be. Phase fluctuations destroy the Bose condensed state and so on. But usually, this parameter for ordinary systems which are confined to 1D, by the way, for people who probably are not very familiar with these quantum gases, what means 1D? All quantum gases are three-dimensional. But then what I can do, I can confine the motion of particles in two directions, to zero-point oscillations, yes? And then, kinematically and statistically, such a system is one-dimensional. And then for macroscopic properties, I can say 1D, yes? Usually, this parameter in such systems is something like 10 to minus 3, 10 to minus 4, 10 to minus 2. And people made enormous efforts in order to make it larger and to reach the so-called strongly interacting regime. Yes, there is now one experiment in the gas phase where this has been done. And this parameter was achieved at level 5 or 10. But usually it's like that. And
just a question. So the size of the system, one would expect naively, depends also on the trap. But so where does the trap?
Yes.
Where the parameters of the trap enter in this?
Yes. The size of the system is determined, let's say, LTF, usually it's Thomas Fermi, is 2 mu divided by m omega squared in the power 1/2, where mu is n maximum multiplied g. Yes, and it's it depends on the trap frequency. Okay. Yes, and for realistic frequencies that people are using nowadays, it cannot be extremely small. Usually, it's 1 hertz or larger. The characteristic size of this Bose gas, it can be of the order of 100 micron, 200 micron. Usually, it's not more. Yes. In principle,
When you repeat the Lewis-Nestor experiment on the without lattice, you mean?
Yeah.
But if the lattice has a filling factor which is very small, can you comment on the difference between having or not having a lattice? Between having a lattice and just considering, okay, I have an effective mass, or not having a lattice at all?
May I do it later? Yes, just because it's a little bit special question. The question is that now I assume that there is no optical lattice in this direction. Yes, what happens if there will be an optical lattice and I have a small filling factor? In principle, you are right. It's also a system that can be considered. And then what I have to do, I have to consider particles with an effective mass and I have to renormalize the coupling constant. And people who do Monte Carlo, for example, in 3D, they do it. Yes, but this is not the subject of the talk. So usually it's this situation. And then the question that has been raised, let's say, one and a half years ago is the following. Imagine, please, that I created this system, and this system was first created in experiments already something like 7 years ago by several groups, Immanuel Bloch, Wolfgang Ketterle, Massimo Inguscio, well, some other groups. So what happens if I create such a system, then I superimpose a disorder potential with the amplitude of the disorder, which is smaller than the chemical potential, the mean field interaction between particles. So the disorder is not very big. And then what it means is that here I have my condensate, and the density of the condensate due to the disorder potential is somehow modulated, but not extremely strongly. Then I switch off this trapping potential. What happens? The condensate is supposed to expand. Does it expand forever, or the expansion stops due to multiple scattering of particles from this disorder potential? And that's how the question has been raised. And then, and the first answer that has been given to this question,
The question we pose, the answer is yes, it will stop. If any, because the chemical potential will drop below the level of the disorder.
Yes, but you know, Thierry, yes. Okay, so, let me tell you the experimental answer in this scenario, because, you know, just to say that the expansion stops, we more or less understand physically that, okay, it expands. Then, when the density is extremely small, these are non-interacting particles, yes, and then clever people like Thierry Jamarqui will tell us immediately, non-interacting particles in 1D are supposed to undergo Anderson localization. So, at some point, we expect that the expansion stops. So, but you know, experimental people in quantum gases, they say, okay, all these things that has been done in condensed matter physics, this is quite nice and perhaps clever, but let us do the experiment, yes? And really, what happened in an experiment, that they created this system, this is the experiment of Alain Aspect and his colleagues at Orsay, switched off the trapping potential, and the amplitude of the disorder was something like 1/5, 1/3, 1/4 of the trapping potential. And then the condensate was expanding first. It was expanding by factor 2, 3, or even 4. And then the expansion was stopping. Then the analysis of experimental data and numerical simulations showed that the following scenario is taking place. That this is my, let's say, disorder potential. Yes? Then,
is the disorder, can you assume it that it is bound, or are these peaks arbitrarily high?
In principle, they can be high, yes, but the probability to have a very high peak is very small, yes.
But so, not arbitrarily high in a spectral potential?
No. But let me comment on this later. So what happened in this first experiment was the following, that the condensate was first expanding, but then it was meeting two large peaks, yes, and the expansion was stopping, yes. So in some sense, yes.
Well, that was the remark I was doing before, essentially, that here there is also a second aspect, that the chemical potential at some point is not necessarily higher than the disorder.
Yeah. Well, what happens though is that when the condensate is expanding, then this potential energy of interaction, which is chemical potential, is transformed into the kinetic energy. So, but since you may have large peaks, yes, if the average amplitude of the disorder is not very small, then it's quite likely that the condensate meets two large peaks, and then the expansion is significantly stopped. Yes, and that's what was happening. Then, what was happening in a later stage, and that's what numerical simulations have been showing, that here, in this region, the condensate was undergoing some oscillations, and there was some small leakage here, and so on, and eventually, these oscillations and multiple scatterings, they were leading to sort of depletion of a condensate. Yes, that's what was the scenario. It has been identified theoretically. And then it has been, I think that people called it disorder-induced trapping or something like that. So it's just a very trivial scenario, yes? And by the way, I was the first one who proposed it theoretically, yes, to analyze the data of Alain Aspect, and the experimental guys got quite unhappy because he, you know, they were expecting nice generic regime for Anderson localization, as Thierry mentioned from the beginning, yes? And that's what was happening. In a later stage, several groups, including those experienced in Anderson localization, like Eric Ackermann from Haifa, and then there were guys from Italy and so on, did extensive numerical calculations. And they were more or less confirming this scenario, yes? And the generic Anderson localization regime was absent, yes? So, in the end, I would like you now to tell a small story which the output of this story is very simple. Before doing extensive numerics and experiment, please sit down and think carefully what you are doing. Yes? Not more than that. What I'm going to tell you is not a great physics, it's just a lesson how to do things.
Can you tell us also a little bit about the nature of the Anderson localization? I mean, like, is it some kind of coherence effect?
Yes, of course, I will tell you. In the course of what I will be describing, I will say a few words, yes? Because actually, I would like to confess that regarding Anderson localization, it's my first work, yes, in the age of almost 60, yes? Am I 60? Not yet.
Not yet.
But not very far, you know. So the thing is the following. So where is my choke? Was here. Yes, it is here. So let us now consider this system, yes, and assume that the disorder potential is small. Yes. So the amplitude of the disorder is small. How small it is, let me write down the criterion later. In fact, what we are supposed to do is, since we are in the weakly interacting regime, let us write down the Gross-Pitayevsky equation for this Bose-Einstein condensate, which is I h bar d psi dt, should I call it psi zero? Okay, doesn't matter, equals to minus h squared divided by 2m delta plus m omega squared z squared divided by 2 plus V over Z. V over Z is the disorder potential plus G psi squared psi. Yes, I could subtract here the chemical potential, or I don't do that, it doesn't matter. So this is the kinetic energy term, this is my trapping potential, this is my disorder potential, this is the mean field interaction between particles. Ordinary Gross-Pitayevsky equation, which has been solved zillion times by very many people. Yes? So then, what I would do, and that's what Laurent Sanchez-Palencia did, my co-author, he said, okay, let me take this guy as small as possible, just to see something in numerical calculations. Let me take the correlation length of the disorder, I will tell later what this is, comparable with the healing length of the condensate. Switch off this guy at some point, yes, and watch the evolution of the condensate wave function. What happens? Okay. And then, and that's what he did. And he did it very accurately and very nicely and so on, and obtained something. What this something is, I will describe very shortly. But first, what I did, I proposed a toy model. Yes? The toy model is the following. Just in order to analyze all these and so on, it's too complicated. Let us then make an assumption. You know, implicitly, I have in mind that when the condensate starts to expand, since the disorder potential is fairly small, it does not play a significant role. Let us make a toy model that initially the disorder potential is absent. Yes? And then I have a very nice trapped condensate. Yes? So, T smaller than T zero, larger than zero, V equals zero, yes? Then, T equals zero, omega put zero. So, the disorder potential is absent. I have my nice trapped condensate, yes? And then I switch off the trapping potential. And then the condensate expands, yes? Right? So then, what I see, okay, it nicely expands, and this type of expansion has been described, yes? And there is the so-called scaling approach, which nicely describes this expansion, and I can calculate the momentum distribution. Then, assuming that T0 is much larger than unit divided by omega, omega is the initial trap frequency, on this time T0, I switch on the disorder potential, yes? And then the condensate already expands and moves in the presence of this disorder. So this is the so-called picture of two-step evolution of a Bose-Einstein condensate.
Time-dependent perturbation of scattering.
Yes, yes. So let me tell you then what happens. So, in this toy model, which is quite simple, I would even use the term trivial, yes? Because, you know, one should really distinguish in between advanced theoretical physics and simple things, yes? So, then, initially, my Bose-Einstein condensate has Thomas Fermi density profile, psi over Z equals 2. Square root of, let's say, n0 unity minus z squared divided by ltf squared in the power of 1/2. Yes? This is the famous Thomas Fermi density profile. Do I have to explain how I obtain Thomas Fermi density profile? You write down the stationary Gross-Pitayevsky equation, yes, where instead of this term I put here minus mu psi, yes, this term is absent, yes. I neglect the kinetic energy term assuming that the size is large and get algebraic equation for psi. Yes? And then I immediately obtain this guy with LTF given by this formula. Yes? So then I switch off the trapping potential. Yes? So then, you know, on the basis of this Gross-Pitayevsky equation, there has been developed the so-called scaling theory. What the scaling theory does, it tells you, if you know the condensate wave function at time t equals zero in the presence of trap, yes, you know it at any moment of time after that, after you switch off. What happens with the Bose-Einstein condensate? You have to rescale the coordinate variable, so psi over z t equals to unity divided by square root of b over t, yes, chi over z divided by b over t, here the rescale time tau. Multiple, and the condensate acquires a deterministic phase, exponent I m 2h bar b dot b z squared. Yes, and then I can also write the term minus e mu tau. I will not write down the expression for the rescale time tau. It's not important. B is the scaling parameter. Yes? And then, if I substitute this expression into this time-dependent Gross-Pitayevsky equation without a disorder potential, then I see that if my scaling parameter B satisfies the equation, B2 dot plus omega squared over t b equals to omega over zero, omega squared divided by b, I think it's b squared, yes, in 1D, yes, then for switching off the trap, this is zero, yes, after t larger than t zero. This is the scaling parameter B, satisfies this equation, that chi here is exactly the initial condensate wave function in rescaled variables, yes? So what happens with the condensate? That simply it expands and the density profile gets rescaled. Yes, it was inverted, it is inverted parabola initially, and it remains an inverted parabola, but just the size of the parabola is increasing. That's it. Yes. So, this is the idea of the scaling approach. Actually, the first people who proposed the scaling approach long time ago, in 1957, it was Popov and Perelomov, yes, for the harmonic oscillator, yes. And later on, much, much later, people have adjusted these to interacting systems and so on. And this has been done by several people. And I did the work on that together with Yuri Kagan, Yvonne Kasten, with Ralph Dumlev, Pitayevsky did the work then and so on. Now, it's a very well-known approach.
I have a question, shall
I? Yes.
You still have the interaction present here, so this corresponds to hydrodynamic expansion of the condensate, or because the ballistic will give you something different. If you turn off the interaction too, then it will just...
No, the interaction is still present.
Yes, so this corresponds to hydrodynamic expansion.
Yes, yes, of course.
And it breaks down at some point when the density becomes too low, or...
Yeah, it depends. It depends. You know, if you assume... it depends on the dimensionality of the problem, yes? In fact, in the 2D case, the scaling approach is exact, assuming that the coupling constant is constant. It's just forever, yes? It never breaks down, yes? In 1D, that's what I'm dealing with, the situation is a bit more complicated in such a way that, you know, when you expand this guy density becomes smaller, and eventually your system may get out of the weakly interacting regime. Yes, and people have analyzed that. Yes, then you have to say that at some point, in principle, this type of scaling approach breaks down. Yes, and there is another scaling approach that you can use, and so on. But here, just to be brief, I assume that this parameter is initially very small, let's say 10 to minus 3, 10 to minus 4, and when the density drops by one or two orders of magnitude, it remains small. Yes, just in order not to deal with other scaling approaches. So that's what is happening, and then when the condensate is expanding in my toy model and the disorder is still absent, I can calculate the momentum distribution of the expanding condensate. How I do that? I do that in a very simple way, that I write that this psi over ZT, yes, equals to integral dk, I put here also square root of 2 pi, I usually don't do it, but that's what Sanchez Palencia did. He has these quantum optician notations, which I hate. Okay, you know, he was writing the text, and in order to get rid of all these things, I had to spend...
Which one you hate, the square root you hate?
Yes, I hate square root of 2 pi here. But, you know, it does not change anything. So, and then, so I expand this function into plane waves, yes? And then, the momentum distribution, which I call d over k, it's modulus of this psi k t squared, yes? And then, I simply use this guy with the initial function high in the form of inverted parabola in the rescaled variables, yes, and do the integration, yes, it's arithmetics, yes, it's called. And then what I obtain is quite nice. I obtain, it's 3n, n is the total number of particles, xi divided by 4 unity minus k squared, psi squared multiplied theta function of unity minus k psi. And psi is the healing length of the condensate, which is here defined as, let me see how we define it here. Yes, it's h bar divided by square root of 4 mu m. Yes, well, I just put here factor 4 for convenience. So where mu is the initial chemical potential, so this is my initial healing length, and then within this scaling approach, the momentum distribution of expanding condensate turns out to be stationary, yes? That's what you can easily calculate yourself, right? So this is d over k, and the plot for d over k is the following. Here is k, here is d, yes, so it is like that. This is unity divided by xi. So there is a high momentum cutoff. Within the Thomas Fermi scaling approach, there are no plane waves with momenta larger than unity divided by xi involved. Yes, that's what it is. Now, let us do the following. The condensate is expanding, and now, Thierry Giammarchi said in the beginning of my talk, I'm sometimes mentioning your name just to attract your attention. Yes?
Give me away.
Yes, yes. You know, if you see that someone in the audience is sleeping, you just say, Thierry, what do you think about that? That it is reasonable to assume that when the density becomes small, particles no longer efficiently interact with each other. Yes? And this term in the Gross-Pitayevsky equation is no longer important. Then the problem becomes linear. Yes? Each K wave in this distribution propagates independently, yes, each K wave undergoes multiple scattering from the random potential, which I switch on right at the time, much larger than unit divided by omega. By the way, this equation has also been obtained assuming that T is much larger than unit divided by omega. In that case, B is square root of 2 omega T. This is called regime of free expansion. Yes? So then I switch on my random potential and see what happens. Yes? And as we learned, not even from Kiri-Jamarki, yes, but even from the older generation of condensed metaphysicists starting from Anderson, that in 1D, the single particle with a certain momentum K in a random potential undergoes Anderson localization. Yes. So, since I exclude all already interactions, each K wave becomes Anderson localized. Yes, and the localization length, a characteristic distance on which it becomes localized, depends on this K. So what I should do? I should now calculate this localized wave function for each momentum K. Yes, each of these functions is transformed to something. Yes, then I have to recollect them together and construct the localized density profile of my Bose-Einstein condensate. So what I have to do is the following.
So instead of expanding in plane waves, which would be the case for a translation invariant, you could expand in the basis of localized states and then perform.
You know, when I started this toy model, the random potential was absent.
Yes, because this plane waves is okay because it's translation invariant, but now you are going to have something.
No. What I'm now going to say is the following. Listen. Do not ask questions before I just explain. The thing is that when I did this expansion, the random potential was still absent. Then I switch it on, and each K wave, each psi over K, is moving in this random potential. And something happens dynamically with this psi over K. Yes? Psi over K multiplied exponent ikz. Yes? And eventually, what happens is that this exponent ikz is transformed into a certain function which I would call phi k over z, yes? And then it is this phi k over z is a localized wave function.
So this k is not playing the role of a momentum, but it's just some quantum number.
Yes, exactly. And then this phi k is such that logarithm modulus phi k over z, yes, is minus gamma over k z, at least at large z. Yes, that's what it is. It exponentially decays. Yes, right. And this is called Lyapunov exponent. Yes, and then the what I should do, I should calculate this Lyapunov exponent for each k, and after that, what I will do, I will perhaps now remove something. I remove the scaling approach. Yes. Then, what I should do? I should calculate the density profile n over z by using the formula. So it will be 0 infinity 2. I have to integrate from minus infinity to infinity over k, but since d over k and d minus k are equal, I put factor 2 here. Dk, momentum distribution, and multiplied phi over phi k over z like this squared, right? That's it. And then this index means average over disorder. Yes, and by the way, it's also here. So, right, then what I have to do, I have to calculate the Lyapunov exponent, yes, or at least calculate the shape of this wave function, and then in such a way that in a later stage, I have to, I can calculate this density. Yes, then in this formula, I made an assumption that for different k, for different momenta, the phases of these localized states are uncorrelated. Yes, and therefore, I am reduced to this equation.
So what's n of z?
Density.
I don't understand.
What you do not understand.
What's the justification of this expression of there? Where did you put dk, which is the dk that you get from the, when k is the momentum?
Yes.
If now this phi of k is in principle, this k is something else. It's just a quantum number.
This was, okay. You know, this is here my initial expansion. Then I have to understand now what happens with this psi, with this guy. Yes. This guy is becoming phi k over z. Yes, right. Yes.
But is it trivial that you, by switching on, you just pass from one to the other?
Yes, of course. What happens? I have a momentum distribution. Particles do not interact with each other. Then the problem becomes linear. Each k wave propagates independently. Then each k wave, each exponent ikz is becoming this function. Yes. Therefore, my total wave function is just this one where I have to plug in phi k over z. Yes? And then, assuming that the phases for different k's are not correlated, I calculate the density, which is psi over z.
I think maybe to I'm also a little bit confused with that. I think the good quantum number is the energy.
Yeah,
k is just now, once you go to localized basis, k is just some parameter. It has no meaning of...
Of course not. Of course not.
But,
you know, here I even use modulus k, and if you wish, if it's easier for you to leave,
energy
is h squared k squared divided by 2m.
So Dora is probably so used to the scattering theory, he's okay, and E is the same thing.
Yes, of course, it's the same thing, you know. Then, what...
So density is now time independent by construction.
No, the thing is that in principle, it could be time dependent,
yeah.
But since the momentum distribution is stationary, then it's time independent. Once... all these k waves get Anderson localized, the density is stationary. Yes?
So this would give you the envelopes, essentially.
Yes, right? Yes, of course. Yes, of course, the envelope. So, now the most...
I don't mean to interrupt, but so there must be a time scale for this to set in, because before, then when it begin to when you suddenly turn on the potential, then this is basically a long asymptotic behavior.
Yes, after some time. Let me comment on that later about asymptotic behavior and not very asymptotic behavior and so on. Because now the interesting part of the story comes. Yes, what I was telling you so far is just obvious. So. The thing is,
the phase cancellation is also not obvious, but I'll save it later.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I mean, the random phase that you have made.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Would you say that when you switch on, it's not completely obvious that you pass?
No, it's obviously pass on here, but then in going from here to the density, yes. You're assuming the interference term is
yes.
There.
Yes. Yes.
And that is the part that, depending on how correlated the initial random potential is, in experiment, that may not be that correlated. So
just a second, you know, Jason, because I always have a very solid argument. What I'm telling you, in this toy model is confirmed by direct numerical calculation. And I will show you the comparison of things, yes? So then, what I would say is that I have to calculate this phi k, in particular the Lyapunov exponent, yes? And then the Lyapunov exponent, of course, depends on the random potential which I'm using. And in quantum guesses, what people are using, they are using the so-called speckle potential, yes, for which the correlation function of the disorder, and the correlation function of the disorder is this one, V over Z prime, average over the disorder. I can denote it as VR squared, yes, multiplied C Z divided by sigma, yes, and the function C is C over U is sine squared U divided by U squared. So this is the correlation function of the disorder. So it's it drops as unity divided by the distance in the square, and there is also this term. Then, what is interesting with this correlation function, that if I calculate the Fourier transform of the correlation function of the disorder, and the Fourier transform I calculate just by multiplying this by exponent ikz, yes, the Fourier transform, which I call here C over K, it is equal to VR squared, this is the amplitude of the disorder, multiplied sigma, multiplied C small over K, and this C small over K is, again, in the notations of Sanchez-Palencia, yes, there is square root of unity minus, here is kappa, yes? Here I should put k sigma, yes? Yes, k sigma. Let me better write down here k sigma. Right? Unity minus k sigma divided by 2 theta function of unity minus k sigma divided by 2. Just take this function, yes, very simple arithmetical exercise, and calculate its Fourier transform. And what you will see is that the Fourier transform of this correlation function has finite support, has high momentum cutoff. Yes, it looks like that. C over K, K, here will be 2 divided by sigma, yes, right? And then it is exactly this formula, yes, so it's more or less like that. Exactly zero at larger k, exactly zero. That's what it is, yes? And now everybody who knows a little bit about the localization theory will tell me what will be the output of my calculations. So what I will now have to do is to calculate the, first of all, the Lyapunov exponent here, yes? And then, how do I do that? I do that in a very simple way. I open the book of Lifshitz, Gradescu, and Pasteur, yes? And then, what is present there is the so-called phase formalism for 1D. In the phase formalism, actually, people say that it has been developed by Pasteur himself, yes? What I do the following, so I think I have, maybe I just remove this one, yes? Do it here. In the phase formalism, I write that this phi k over z, if you wish I can write phi e, doesn't matter, right, equals to r over z sine theta over z, yes, and then phi k prime, the z derivative over z equals to k r over z cosine theta over z. Then assuming, so, and then the Lyapunov exponent gamma of k, or gamma of e, if you wish, it's minus limit for modulus z tending to infinity. Yes, here will be logarithm of r over z divided by z. Yes, right. And then averaged over the disorder. Yes, like this. Am I right? Yes, yes, I am right. Yes, this is the Lyapunov exponent. Then, what I can do, I can say that if the random potential is small, then the amplitude, it's just the amplitude. Yes, of course. Yes, of course. Both theta and r are k-dependent. But this is just a formalism. But then what people say is that if the disorder potential is small, then this theta is mostly kz, kz plus something. And I can, in the Schrödinger equation for a single particle, I can make an expansion to first order in the quantity which is d z theta over z divided by k minus 1. Yes? And that's what they do. In the end, what you obtain is that gamma over k equals to, there is a numerical coefficient which I do not write here. Here will be Vr squared Vr divided by energy in the square will be unity divided by sigma. Yes. Here will be K sigma in the square. Yes. And there will be C of 2k sigma. Exactly this Fourier transform of my correlation function of the disorder. Yes. And then the criterion for this formula, it's actually gamma over k much smaller than k. I can write it through V, but I will not do that. And then people who do localization, they like to speak about the mean free path, yes? And then in 1D, the mean free path is just the localization length, yes? And then the criterion can be written KL much larger than 1. They like this inequality very much. And then they're extremely happy saying there is a generic regime and so on, yes? So, that's what it is. And then, you see from here that the Lyapunov exponent to this order, and this is sometimes called Born approximation, yes, or first order approximation, is proportional to the Fourier transform of the correlation function of the disorder. Therefore, if I plot here, instead of C over K, let's say gamma over K, then here, it's more or less as it is, yeah? So it can go somewhere like this, yes? Unity divided by sigma. For momenta k larger than unity divided by sigma, the correlation function of the disorder, its Fourier transform in the Born approximation, is zero. Then what happens is that, for example, people like Sanchez-Palencia start jumping and shouting the words mobility edge in 1D and so on. Yes, it's a great achievement of speckle potentials, which of course is not true, because it's only zero, the Fourier transform of the correlation function to this order in the Born approximation. Generally speaking, there are theorems in these disordered systems that say that any particle with any energy in 1D gets Anderson localized unless there are these so-called strongly correlated potentials. It's a very special case, which I will not discuss here. Here the situation is peculiar, and then what happens is that we can speak here about a sort of effective mobility edge in the Born approximation. Yes? But what is interesting is, and we got questioned by serious people, people who understand what the situation is, what happens with the Lyapunov exponent here? Because generally speaking, I cannot say that it's exactly zero. It can be something, yes? And then what we did exact numerical calculations for this speckle potential, yes, of the Lyapunov exponent. And then it turns out that here, assuming that this KL is 5, 7, 10, yes, the Lyapunov exponent drops by at least two orders of magnitude compared to the value here, yes? So, then, if I turn this to the calculation of the localization length, it will turn out to be something like 10 centimeters, which is by far significantly larger than the size of the system in any quantum gas experiment. So, therefore, what I should say here, being modest and learning things from very clever books, yes, that at least this finite size effect is present, that I cannot prove rigorously that the Lyapunov exponent here is exactly zero. I cannot do that, yes. But what I can do in a very clumsy and, let's say, straightforward way, just by numerics, I can prove that it's smaller by two or even three orders of magnitude than the value here. Yes? Therefore, what I see, that there is a finite size effect here, at least finite size effect. We're now doing an interesting work with Alain Conté regarding this type of correlation functions of the disorder, just to understand what happens with the Lyapunov exponent and so on, but this is in future. Yes, at least I can say that it is extremely small and the corresponding localization length is by far exceeding the size of the system. So in reality, this will be sort of mobility edge, although we understand clearly that in 1D, for ordinary potentials, mobility edge is not present. Then, what happens is the following.
So this centimeter, 10 centimeter thing, you got it from the 1 over sigma, from the cutoff?
I get it here, for momenta larger than unity divided by sigma. Okay. Yes, because if it's here, it's okay. It's a comparatively small value of several hundred microns and so on. Yes. But then it drops significantly for momenta larger than this guy. Yes.
How do you calculate
1 over gamma?
Yes, it's 1 over gamma. Localization length is 1 over gamma. Yes, sorry. Then, you know, in order to do these calculations, according to this formula, I should know not only the Lyapunov exponent, but also the expression for this phi over k, or at least phi over k modulus squared averaged over the disorder, in order to do the calculations properly. Then, you know, I do things which I usually do on these occasions. You know that old Russian literature in JET and JET letters is a gold mine. If you look there, you definitely find something useful. Yes, and that's what we did. There was an old work of Gogolin, Rajba, and someone else who actually did this work for us. They calculated this guy, yes? And the result of their calculation is the following. Let me remove this here. That phi k over z, write this like this, is equal to, for gamma z, gamma over k modulus z much larger than 1, it is unity proportional to unity divided by modulus z in the power 3/2 exponent minus gamma over k, like this. Let me check, because I have my stuff here. Yes, right. And then they even wrote down more general formula, yes, and the general formula reads that this phi k over z squared, averaged over the disorder, is pi squared gamma over k. Those who don't like k, for those I can write e if you wish, yes, divided by 2, yes, multiplied integral du from 0 to infinity, yes, u sinh u. You know, it's absolutely terrible in these American notations to write cos, sinh. In the Russian notations, it's sh, ch, th, cth, which is much more convenient in my view, but okay. I am living in this world, so I have to do that. It's actually pi u, yes? Then multiplied by unity plus u squared divided by unity plus cos pi u, yes? I think in the square, exponent in the power minus 2 unity plus u squared gamma over k modulus z. Here I wrote wrongly, it's minus 2 because it's density. So this is the formula which has been obtained by Gogolin, Rajba, and so on. And this assumes that the size of a speckle is significantly smaller than the distance between speckles in our case.
Yeah, it's 1 over z cubed.
Here's that 3/2. In the, you know.
It's the density, but
yes, yes, of course. Just a second, let me check. No, it's the density, which is unity divided by z modulus z 3/2, yes? And this you can easily obtain it from here, assuming that this guy is large, you integrate over u, and then you obtain this formula, yes? It's just straightforward. So then, we also tested that in our case, the Rajba-Gogolin formula works sufficiently well, yes? Just tested numerically for several cases. And then my main achievement at this point was to integrate this formula. You know, it's not sufficient only to rewrite this formula from the old work of Gogolin and Rajba. You should also nicely integrate this formula. Yes? You know, I am telling you honestly the whole story, yes, just in such a way that later on you are not able to say that Shlyapnikov is cheating someone. Let me say a few words how I integrate. So I plug in here this d over k from here, yes, and this phi k modulus squared average from here, yes, and do the integration. I did it personally, yes. So then let's have a look here. The momentum distribution of my expanding condensate has a cutoff unity divided by xi. Yes? And the Lyapunov exponent, which is here, yes, the Lyapunov exponent has a momentum cutoff unity divided by sigma. So let's make the following plot. This will be d over k. Yes, and then let me assume that unity divided by sigma is larger than this guy. So, unity divided by sigma. Yes, this will be gamma over k. Then, the momentum cutoff in this formula is provided by the initial momentum distribution, right here. For largest possible momenta, unity divided by xi, the Lyapunov exponent gamma is finite. Then, if I just do the integration, since gamma is finite, I get exponential localization. Yes? And then, for that case,
So this is a regime where the random potential varying a scale much shorter than the coherence.
Yeah, longer. Just shorter. Okay. Yeah.
Experimentally, that's the case.
I will tell you later on what experimentally the situation is. So in this case, if let's say, I have to remove something. What do I? Okay, let me remove this one. In this case, where unity divided by xi is smaller than unity divided by sigma, which is xi larger than sigma, I get that my n over z will be proportional to unity divided by modulus z in the power 7/2 exponent minus 2 gamma of unity divided by xi modulus z. Exponential localization. Yes? And that's what I just do by exactly integrating the Rashba-Gogolian formula with my scaling approach momentum distribution. That's what I can do. Please believe me. Yes? So, then here, the whole condensate gets Anderson localized. Yes? In the other case, where, for example, if I have a different situation, where unity divided by sigma is smaller than unity divided by xi, or xi is smaller than sigma, you see here that the momentum cutoff here is already provided by the Lyapunov exponent. It's unity divided by sigma. And then, for largest possible momenta like that in the momentum distribution, the Lyapunov exponent is tending to zero. Yes? And then, what you obtain here, that due to this circumstance, two things happen. First of all, we see that those particles with they continue to propagate. They are not localized. So the localization is only partial, yes, due to this phenomenon which I mentioned. Second, the localization becomes algebraic in the sense of the final density profile, modulus z in the square. Yes? So that's the expression in the tail. So here, the expansion, those guys continue to expand and just fly away, and those get localized. So I get algebraic localization, very nice term, but here it's a trivial consequence of the correlation function of the disorder that I was just plotting. Yes? And then what we have done after obtaining these analytical results, I would like to confess here that historically it was exactly the other way around. First, Sanchez Palencia did exact numerical calculations, and then we did this toy model. just saying you frankly. What we have done, we have compared the result of exact numerics Well, what is exact? Based on this Gross-Pitayevsky equation, which I removed, and compared it with this toy model result. So the comparison looks like that. This is the density profile of my condensate. So this is my toy model, and this is, let's say, my numerical results. This is for the case of exponential localization. Yes,
they. The solid line is the Merkle, and the dotted line is the.
Yes, exactly. I can show you. It's here. Yes.
Yes.
And you see, in the center of the condensate, there is a disagreement, just
that,
because.
That's in the case of the second case, one of the z squared.
No, no, it's for the exponential case, for example. Yes, and then you see that in the central part, there is some disagreement, just because the central part is mostly provided by small momenta, yes, where the phase formalism does not work well, there can be the role of remaining interactions in the center and so on, but the rest is okay.
You have no interactions here, like in the numerical model is all...
No, no, in the, you know, in the toy model, yeah. I have no interactions.
But in the numerical they have?
Yes, in the numerics they are, yes. Numerics is exact in this case, just exact Gross-Pitayevsky equation without any approximation.
Just a question on the numerics or on the effect of interaction. What does it mean it's exact? Because when you have interacting particle, it's known that dealing with localization.
Yes.
What do you mean GP is a solid GP?
This is a midfield.
Yes, of course. No. What I. Yes, of course. What I mentioned after pronouncing the term exact, it's exact Gross-Pitayevsky equation. Yes. I do not pretend on anything more than that. Yes. And so, that's what it is. And then we also compared the results of numerics for this case, this power law localization. And then we really obtained numerically that the density profile is behaving as unity divided by z squared. It's not exactly 2, but it can deviate by 5, 10%. Here is the plot. Yes. So the question is, why is it such that all clever people who did numerics before did not find this? You know, if you come up with something and some people worked on that and you say, guys, what you did, wow, guys are not happy, yes? But let me tell you the following story, that in the experiment of Alain Aspect, which was performed more than a year ago, where this disorder-induced self-trapping got observed, the healing length, initial healing length of a condensate was something like 0.2 microns, yes, and sigma, the correlation length of the disorder, was something like 5 or 10 microns, yes. And then, people who were doing numerical calculations, you know, people are just, okay, there is an experiment, these are the parameters. Let me do for this type of parameters, since slightly vary them by factor 2, 3, 4, and so on. You see here that the healing length was smaller than the correlation length of the disorder by more than one order of magnitude, by factor 20, 30. Look here. It means that this guy was somewhere here, yes, and this guy here. Which means, from our picture, that for these speckle potentials, most of the condensate was flying ballistically through. Not localized. Only a small fraction could stay localized. And okay, that's what it is. People were trying to vary these parameters a little bit, but then they got problems with the amplitude. Because if this is the case, then the criterion gamma over k, much smaller than k, will read that the amplitude of the disorder, Vr, should be much smaller than the chemical potential multiplied psi divided by sigma in the square. So the amplitude of the disorder should be sufficiently small. This is when psi is smaller than sigma. Yes? And therefore, and these conditions were not satisfied neither in the numerics nor in the experiment of Alain Aspect that he was doing. Yes? And you know, in an experiment, the conditions were not satisfied for a very simple reason. It's difficult to achieve sigma small, but
so in I don't remember the criteria. Experimentally, do they see most of them fly away and there's some only a part of it localized?
No, the thing is that in an experiment, they see this disorder-induced self-trapping, yes, and the small leakage out of it.
Only small leakage.
Yes. And in the numerics, they either see also this disorder-induced self-trapping when the amplitude is large. When the amplitude is smaller, they just see nothing useful. Yes. Well, what I would like to say here is the following, that by decreasing density, one can have this, let's say, in between 0.1 and 0.5 microns. And now, you know, these applied opticians, they're very, very experienced guys with these speckles. People in the group of Alain Aspect managed to reduce experimentally, this guy by more than one order of magnitude. The experiment that they run now, I just expect results within a week or so, maybe a month, I don't know, is from, let's say, 0.3 to, let's say, 2 or 3 microns. They even say 0.2 sometimes, you know. So the correlation length of the disorder can even be made smaller than the healing length, yes? So what we can do, we can meet both regimes of localization, exponential localization and algebraic, yes? And this is very interesting, and that's what the experiment is about now, yes? And okay, so that's what it is. And I think I finished. Thank you for attention.
Okay, so can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is there an idea how the interaction will change this picture? Even on, forget the experiment, just on a purely theoretical basis, because, I mean, interactions certainly screw up this separation of Lyapunov exponent and so on and so forth. I mean,
yes. Yes.
Is there any control on that? Or,
people are doing some work on this now, and would you allow me to remove something from here? I can explain you what they do, and for example, the work that they do now is that what you have an atom waveguide. For example, in these cheap experiments, again, what people try to do, they try to do this assuming 1D, yes? And then you have a propagating with a certain velocity V, you have a BEC beam, yes? And here, you superimpose a random potential, yes? And then people are trying to understand what happens and so on. And there is a recent work of Lobov, Pavlov, Tobias Paul, actually from my lab, but it's not me, which is mostly numerical work. They are trying also to write down an effective hydrodynamic equation where the disorder potential is included. What they claim, again, they claim is that, of course, it's a weakly interacting region, BEC beam, not your case with strong interactions, that when the velocity is larger than the critical velocity, Yes. Then the regime of localization occurs. If not, there is no localization. That's what they say. And regarding your question about these interactions, I would like to say that in these quantum guesses, this only started recently, yes? And I think that people are still learning things, yes? I would say here that in condensed metaphysics for electrons and solids, there is a long-standing discussion in literature about the role of interactions. Even the concept of many-body localized states has been introduced and so on. I think it should be something similar here.
I mean, for fermions, there are runoff corrections when you take into account the feedback of the disorder on the interaction.
Yes.
So I was just wondering, and this is weak localization, so the disorder is weak.
Yeah.
These are the first corrections that are computed with as well.
Yes, this is true.
I think there's several issues here. One is once that, how does one understand the interaction effects within GP? The second is that, how valid is the GP equation as time goes on? But let's go back to the first one now. The indication of your calculation, which agrees so well with experiment, is the numerical experiment is shows that at least in the regime where the correlation length of random potential is large, much larger than the condensate is sort of fairly well protected. That then the assumption that this scheme seems to work, i.e. that everything expands ballistically for a while, and then you can, when the density may be sufficiently low, you can treat each one of them maybe independently, and the error is actually rather small, only that they, but then on, I think the conceptual difficulty may be at the other end, when the potential is much shorter scale than the condensate, then one would have thought that they would affect the condensate a lot. Then the question is that whether the interaction effects within GP will be.
Are you going, Jason?
Can you compare experiment for the second case? How does it compare with the numerical experiment? Suppose you predict it's one of a z squared.
Oh yes, it compares very well.
Yes.
Yes, it compares very well. What you are telling me is the following, and this is the question that I raise when people start talking about this propagating BEC beams. Who told you that the Gross-Pitayevsky equation remains valid in the...
Then come back to this, my second question.
Yes. But let me do it myself, yes? Please, do not think that I don't know this question, yes? And the thing is that this is true. Who told you that the depletion of a condensate when it's moving in the random potential is small, and you may use the Gross-Pitayevsky equation? Yes. Then, you know, what I did personally, I tried to calculate the depletion of the condensate, at least in those conditions, to make an estimate, and it really turned out to be small.
Really?
Yes.
What's
yes.
the sensitivity?
Oh, just because, you know, it depends on the amplitude of the disorder.
Right. No.
Yes. Then, you know, imagine, please, that you have a 1D system, yes, and the amplitude of your disorder is tending to zero. Yes, and you create a sort of excited state momentum distribution. Then this system, short-range interacting 1D Bose gas, is an integrable system. It's a Lieb-Linegar gas. And we know that in an integrable system... Yes. Gross-Pitayevsky is equivalent to Lieb-Linegar. Just a second. What I said, imagine that the amplitude of the disorder is tending to zero. Yes, then it's an integrable model, and in an integrable model, whatever excited momentum distribution is created, it stays forever. It does not relax. Therefore, things related to relaxation are present only due to the fact that there is a disorder potential in the system. For small disorder amplitude, they are comparatively small. Yes, that's what I would say. But this question is interesting, Yes, and people are now trying to analyze, let's say, 2D systems which are not integrable and so on. So this question has right to live. Yes.
But you wouldn't expect some fragmentation of the system if it's sufficiently long, and then you get that your Grotzky calculation is.
No. Now, the thing is that this was the mistake of all these atomic and condensed metaphysicists who were doing these numerical calculations. You know what is important? All these fragmentation effects and so on, they occur in the case where you have the so-called strong scatterers. Yes? What means strong scatterers is that the tunneling probability through the, let's say, a certain peak is already significantly smaller than one. Here, we consider the case where all scatterers are weak. And this is contained in this criterion, which I removed in the validity of the phase formalism, by the way. If you compare it, then you will see that even for low momenta, yes, all these peaks, all these disorder peaks are such that the transmission probability is close to one. Whatever your energy is, it's always almost transmits through the disorder potential. Yes. Therefore, no fragmentation effects are present, and you have a generic regime.
And you will not expect that, continuing with this question, that the effect of phase fluctuation at finite temperature will be enhanced by the disorder? You will not expect that?
Oh, this I don't know.
Because I saw the other day in the Denver meeting, I saw the... This is possible.
But you know, before considering, let's say, second order things, finite temperature effects and so on, let's do it at zero temperature. Yes, and what happens at a finite temperature? How disorder can enhance phase fluctuations? Maybe it can. Sorry? Yes. But you know, you are asking me a question which I never thought of, and my answer is yes, it may be possible.
Okay, so thank you so much.
So.